Bobby Cohen is back, and his show is Takeover Talk. And here is Bobby Cohen.
Thank you, Doug. It's Monday, September 17th, and today is another live hour of Takeover Talk. I'm your host, Bobby Cohen. Our focus will be to assist you in acquiring the most current and comprehensive information on potential public takeover targets in the U.S. capital markets. Please remember, I'm just guiding you to this information. You need to do your own due diligence before buying or selling any stock. M&A, which is the acronym for mergers and acquisitions, is unpredictable. And it's usually not in the best interest to acquire stocks simply because rumors are percolating. You have to like it as a standalone company as well. Okay, listeners, thank you. I'm Bobby Cohen. I am your host of Takeover Talk. Wow, takeovers are alive and well. Let's follow potential takeovers. It doesn't get any better than this. Okay, let's jump right into it, okay? The first company I'd like to discuss is Southwest Airlines. The symbol is Larry Uncle Victor Love. Stock is currently trading at $63.25. The 52-week high is $67. The 52-week low is $50. Southwest Airlines engages in the management of a passenger airline. Just recently, I found a U.S. news article dated August 9th, 2018. The headline, Southwest stock rises on Buffett buyout talk. That's correct. You heard me. The Oracle of Omaha, one of the richest men on the planet, Warren Buffett. Berkshire Hathaway, the company run by Warren Buffett, has more than $100 billion in cash on its balance sheet. And the Morgan Stanley analyst, the big investment house, Morgan Stanley, an analyst from that firm said that Berkshire's Buffett may be eyeing a buyout of Southwest Airlines, symbol L-U-V. The article goes on to say that Berkshire already has large investments in Southwest, Delta, and American Airlines. The analyst said Southwest makes the most sense as a potential full takeover candidate. Morgan Stanley has no direct evidence that Berkshire is considering a Southwest buyout, but the article states the two companies are hypothetically a good fit. The article finishes up by saying if Berkshire makes a bid for Southwest, investors can expect a price of between $70 and $80 per Southwest share. Now, again, that's not a huge premium to where the stock is currently trading, which I stated it was around $63.25. But it's worth putting on your radar screen. Buffett is no dope. Some say he could be the smartest guy in the room. And keep in mind, in reference to Southwest, I believe Berkshire already has a $2.8 billion investment in Southwest. Talk about having skin in the game. Keep an eye on Southwest Airlines, symbol LUV. You know, you never know. You wake up in the morning, and I've seen this happen before. Berkshire Hathaway just comes out with a mega takeover. Could it be LUV? Could it be Southwest? The article seems to point towards that. Only time will tell. But it's always good to have Warren Buffett as a tailwind. The next company I'd like to discuss with you is Kansas City Southern. The symbol, King Sam Uncle. Stock is currently trading at $117.30. The 52-week high is $120.34. The 52-week low is $99.49. Kansas City Southern is a transportation holding company that has railroad investments in the United States, Mexico, and Panama. I stumbled upon a very good Reuters article dated September 2nd, 2018. The headline, trade deal, comma, M&A, which is mergers and acquisition potential, could lift Kansas City Southern shares 20%, and that was as per Barron's. It stated the U.S. railroad operator, Kansas City Southern, could see shares rise as much as 20% thanks to a boost from a recent trade agreement between the U.S. and Mexico. And its potential, again, its potential to be an acquisition target. That's what Barron said. The article goes on to say that the stock could also see an even bigger pop if it received an acquisition overture from another railroad company. Its small size and lack of overlap with other railroads makes it one of the few railroad operators that could easily pass muster with antitrust regulators, and that was as per Barron's. So this is very, very interesting. Put Kansas City Southern, KSU, on your radar screen and continue to do your homework. This was Kansas City Southern, KSU. Okay. The next company I'd like to discuss with you is Caesars Entertainment. The symbol, CZR. Charlie Zebra Robert. Stock is currently trading at $10.50. The 52-week high is $14.50. The 52-week low is $8.55. Caesars Entertainment is a holding company which engages in the provision of casino entertainment and hospitality services. Okay. Like I told you in the past, I love reading the New York Post. So back on September 12th, I opened up the New York Post as I always do. First, I go to the business section, then I go to the sports section. But I go to the business section and I noticed another fabulous article by reporter Josh Cosman. The guy is just terrific, a terrific reporter. And the headline of Josh's article, activist hedge fund secretly built stake to push Caesar's sale. An activist hedge fund known for rattling the cages of gaming companies has quietly built a 4.9% stake in Caesars. The fund is H.G. Vora Capital. That's right, H.G. Vora Capital. It is said they are intent on forcing the company to put itself up for sale or to sell significant assets, sources said in the article. The move by the hedge fund comes as a general discontent is growing among the shareholder base, which much of it aimed at its chief executive officer. The article, the New York Post article, does not name any potential acquirers. But please keep in mind that Parag Vora, who runs the hedge fund, is an ex-Goldman Sachs banker in the gaming space, the same space that Caesars Entertainment is in. The fund, in recent years, has invested in Penn National, which merged this year with Pinnacle Holding. It currently also owns stakes in MGM, another large casino hospitality company, and in Caesars Resorts Investment Trust, Vicky Properties. To me, and this is now just to me, to Bobby Cohen Stewart, this guy from the hedge fund has the pedigree to shake things up and possibly make things happen over at Caesars. Again, he's an activist shareholder, and most activist shareholders do extensive due diligence. And I always say, what I like to hear from activist shareholders are three words, what I like to hear, which the three words are: enhance shareholder value, a catalyst, an activist shareholder. That checks a box on a company that could be a potential takeover. Tremendous article from the New York Post, Josh Cosman. I always like to make reference to the New York Post and to Josh. Thank you. Okay. Please, my listeners, the call in and talk number, please call in 1-888-627-6008. Again, the call-in number. Talk to me. Let me know what's on your mind. Is 1-888-627-6008. That's my direct call-in number. Let me know what's on your mind. Do you have a potential takeover that you'd like to discuss with me and the rest of our listeners? Again, to all my listeners, it's an honor to serve all of my listeners. It's an honor. Please remember, making money in stocks is not easy. You have to do your own homework. I'm just sharing information that I found on the internet with you in reference to potential takeover targets. I'm mining for potential takeover opportunities for all of my listeners. I have a caller. Alex, it's Bobby, Takeover Talk.
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for calling, Alex.
No problem. So I have a question, Bobby. I'm a hedge fund manager in New York, and I have a particular portfolio of microcap stocks. And one of the portfolio managers really pushing an M&A strategy in his portfolio. Do you have any particular concerns with the amount of speculation on microcap securities before getting involved?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny you mention that, Alex, because you know what? Even though takeovers are alive and well, it's hard enough combing through, you know, all the information and the internet and finding potential takeovers in either blue chip stocks or companies that trade on the New York Stock Exchange or the National NASDAQ. So I can't even fathom how challenging it might be to try to find, you know, diamonds in the rough in reference to microcap stocks and microcap companies. You know, I don't want to paint every microcap company with the same brush, Alex. But, you know, I don't know how much due diligence could be done on these companies. And I don't know if there are any major brokerage firms that do, you know, that do their homework and do the due diligence to be able to, you know, to be able to opine if a microcap company could be a potential takeover target. And as you know, Alex, and feel free to hop in, you being a hedge fund manager, oftentimes microcap companies come full of dilution. There are different types of instruments, and that's the challenge within itself. I personally would stay away from the takeover speculation in the microcap arena in general. Don't get me wrong. There's probably, you know, nuggets out there, well, like I mentioned earlier, diamonds in the rough. But, yeah, to your point, if there's gun to head, to my head, Alex, I would shy away from that, and I would just, you know, focus on, you know, individual as one-ups in the microcap space instead of painting, you know, instead of just going all in as a way of just, you know, investing in that space on potential takeovers. What's your thought on that, Alex?
I think I tend to agree with you, and I've been hesitant with that particular portfolio manager to give him the green light because, like you said, an extra layer of due diligence has to be done on the balance sheet because the merger rumors are incorrect and they happen to have some toxic financing, let's say. You could really lose your whole investment. And that's what I was most worried about.
Yeah, no, I mean, I share your vision, and I'm glad you're thinking along my lines as well. You know, I would hate for you to get your legs blown off, you know, in something like that. And, you know, just from my experience being back in the hedge fund games, Alex, I'd prefer to be on the side of being a lender to microcap companies than possibly being an investor in microcaps based on potential takeover chatter. What are your thoughts on that, Alex? Do you concur with me?
I think I tend to agree with most of what you just said there. My only other question, is there any way to hedge a position in one of these microcap securities? Say I do have a good feeling about a particular investment. Is there any way I can protect my principal in one of these investments?
Well, you know, that's also a very good question. But then that would, you know, I think we'd have to then segue into the conversation of being able to, a hedge would also means not only going long, but possibly going short. And it's very challenging from what I was told and from when I was in the business many years ago of getting a good borrow on stock. So if you wanted a hedge, you know, you'd be able to hedge your positions by going short either some of the stock or maybe a different instrument in that company. I know things have changed a bit since I had been in the business, but I'm not saying it's not possible. But, you know, if something is way too complicated, you know, you might as well just, you know, stick with what you know best and kind of, you know, and wait until the dust settles and see if somebody else could, you know, could go west, could be, you know, Lewis and Clark and go west of the Mississippi first and see how they do, and then kind of be like the second or third person. You know, sometimes there's no nobility, Alex, with being the first one, you know, because, you know, comes, you know, being the first one comes with a lot of risk. So,
I agree.
If you're asking me, and there's a gun to my head, I would say, Alex, I would just, you know, I'd do a lot more homework on this and possibly let somebody else be the first or second, you know, fund or individual to invest in this type of strategy, Alex.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the insight, Bobby. I'll be listening
Alex, I appreciate you calling. Where is your hedge fund? Where are you based at?
We're in Manhattan, right around Penn Station.
Oh, that's great. Well, Alex, I take it you're a first-time caller. I appreciate you calling in, and I hope I was helpful, and hopefully I'll be able to hear back from you in the not-too-distant future. Okay, Alex?
Definitely. Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks again, Alex. Thank you.
Have a good
night. Thank you. That was Alex from Manhattan. He's a hedge fund manager. Boy, he had a very good question. But I'm going to take another call. We got Pete. Pete, it's Bobby. Takeover
hey,
Talk.
Bob.
Thanks for calling, Hello. Pete.
Good. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm good. Thanks for the boy. I always welcome when you call. You're chock full of good intel. What do you got for me today? What are you thinking, Pete?
Yeah, I'm still looking overall. Again, nothing on the takeover front. I haven't really noticed anything that has caught my eye. Just calling in, talking a little bit maybe about gold and silver. It's been, you know, as you probably well aware of, it's definitely been, and the miners have been in a bearish phase probably over the last couple of years, at least. And yeah, it's just my opinion. At some point, I don't believe the secular bull market in the precious metals is over. And I think at some point, we're going to see a, you know, again, resumption of the bull market that was in place for a while. That would probably lend some credence to some of these junior miners that may have some decent properties, and you might be able to do some more research. I'm going to do some research, too, that might be a positive takeover for some of the bigger miners.
Yeah, Pete, it's, you know, I have to tell you, I think there may have been one or two companies that I might have mentioned over the last few weeks in reference being potential takeover targets, you know, in the gold sector and the precious metals. And I have to mention to you, because there seems to be such a lack of takeover chatter, to me,
right,
being my contrarian hat, with gold at $1,200, I have a tendency to think along your lines and think that there may be an event or something or a catalyst that's going to wake this thing up because you speak, you know, you speak to 10 people, Pete. 9 out of 10 people are talking, woe is me, gold and precious metals are dead, and I'm going to sleep for a while. And I think you mentioned to me that, you know, you were once in the investment field, and once the needle goes way to the other way for people that are just so despondent in precious metals, I mean, you know, this is something, and I think you've seen it. You know, you could wake up one day and gold could be up $50, $100, and you go outside to go grab a cup of coffee, and the next day it's up $100. We saw that back, you know, in 1980, and then we saw it again in the early 2000s. So I tend to agree with you because the stock market itself, and you feel free to hop in, Pete, the stock market to me is just set up for perfection, total perfection here at 28,000 or 27,000. And to me, if someone sneezes in the world, we got a shot to catch a cold. Am I right, Pete?
Right.
And I think I
agree. And, you know, there's two trains of thought. You know, we're so used to, and it could happen this way, but we could also have the, you know, there's another train of thought, too, that's out there, and you know, it, which could also take hold as far as a bear market. Don't always have to have a crash to have a severe bear market like we did in the 70s. I don't believe there was a crash. It just kept grinding down and grinding down, and each time it, you know, would reverse, it was just nothing more than a selling opportunity as it grinded down over the, you know, most of the decade in the 1970s. So at the end of the day, you could either get a catalyst, you could get something like you said, where you wake up one day and the market's down 40%, or it could go down, 40 or 50% over a period of 7 or 8 years. So either way, it's devastating. And, you know, the market's being up here, don't forget, you have a lot of those high-flying stocks, you know, that are weighted, that are really keeping the averages, you know, kind of up in the stratosphere, I would think.
No, I totally agree with you. And, you know, there's a lot of smart people out there. Most of them a lot smarter than myself. But, you know, even the guys that run billions of dollars, their belief is that almost every portfolio should have at least 5% gold, silver, at least that.
Sure.
And I agree, Pete.
Sure.
Because I believe if I had to draw a metaphor, to me, gold and precious metal and silver, you know what it's like? It's like Xanax. It's, you know, it helps you sleep. It helps, you know, it's like a sleeping pill. You know what I mean? Sometimes, you know, because look, you, me, all our listeners, we're geared to worry about things. What could go wrong? It's always nice to have a little hedge in there of the precious metal, of the gold nugget.
Sure.
And I think, right, Pete?
Exactly. Yep. And if there is a resumption, you know, you're looking at a 50% retracement. Could it come down another 100 to 200 points? You know, gold, you know, and silver come down more too? Sure, it can. But at the end of the day, a 50% retracement from 1900 is still not considered really a secular bear market. So at this point, we've been in a cyclical bear market, but at any point in time, whatever's going to be that trigger, once it starts resuming its uptrend again, which I firmly believe, then that's when you're going to start hearing a lot of the chatter amongst looking at some of these juniors that can be ripe for takeover.
And Pete, something we did not touch upon, okay, and if you want to opine, is you know, these currencies, it seems like every day you turn on the TV, it's Argentina in trouble, it's Turkey in trouble. This is just, you know, it's ink on paper, but gold is gold. I don't want to get into a doomsday thing and saying that all the currencies, you know, that 90% of the currency is going to go to zero. But at the end of the day, if there was a hiccup, if there was an issue, gold is gold, Pete. Silver is silver, Pete.
That's right.
You, Diamonds are diamonds, Pete. And I really, I'm glad you put this front and center to the listeners, because I think you're onto something. Again, timing is everything in life, but I'd rather be, Pete, and you tell me if this is your thinking, I'd rather be 4 years early than a day late.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And now, again, barring, you know, something unforeseen, that gold and silver, for lack of better words, are done, well, that's the case. But at this point, you're buying, especially a lot of the junior miners and just the miners in general, especially on the silver side as well. You're buying them near the bottom. You're not buying them expensive. You're buying them on the cheap, which is what everybody and all the listeners should always understand. Buy when they're on sale and sell when everybody else wants it.
Pete, I could not agree with you more. And I think there's some deep apathy right now in reference to precious metals, i.e., you know, gold and silver, Pete. And I appreciate you bringing it up. I think it's going to be timely. I think we're going to look back and you're going to call in one Monday and we're going to say, holy cow, did Pete get it out of the park? So I agree with you, Pete.
Yep.
I really do, man. And again, thanks for calling in. Okay, Pete?
No problem. Anytime. Always good to chat with you and hope that your listeners get something out of everything that we talk about.
Thanks again, Pete. You're the best, okay? You enjoy your Monday.
Care.
Thank you, Pete.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Take care, Bobby. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. You know, I couldn't agree more with Pete. I have to tell you. It's, you know, and I don't always agree with people, you know. I didn't get to where I was in life because of, I always agree with people. But I do, I did agree with Pete in reference to his position on precious metals and gold and silver. And then I also, believe it or not, that we had a good call before Pete was Alex. I'm sorry, Doug, do we have another caller?
Yes, David.
Hi, David? This is Bobby.
Howdy.
Howdy.
I'm calling in from South Texas. I'm a fund manager out in the oil and gas space, and would love to hear about any tips or anything you might have for me in the field.
Hiya, David. So you're from South Carolina, huh?
South Texas.
Oh, you're from Texas. I'm sorry. last week, I made reference to a company called Jagged Peak Energy. Are you familiar with that one? That one's kind of in your sweet spot down there in Texas.
Dan, I'm not. I'd love to hear a little more, though.
Yeah, it's Jagged Peak Energy. The symbol is JAG, which is, I mentioned this, I believe, last week or the week before, and Jagged Peak Energy is an independent oil and gas company focused on the acquisition and development of unconventional oil and associated liquids, rich natural gas reserves in the southern Delaware Basin, which is a sub-basin of the Permian Basin of West Texas. So that may be in your backyard, Dave.
That it is. Something I'll definitely take a look at.
Yeah. Just so you know, back on March 28th, there was another takeover. It was an $8 billion takeover, which, believe it or not, in your area, in that basin, by Concho Resources. And now the whole group looks to be hot as a pistol now. So that's Jagged Peak Energy, and the stock currently trades, I think, at around $13, Dave, okay? So why don't you take a hard look
at it? I got it up now.
Yeah, you take a hard look at that. Do your homework.
I'll have the analyst run all the numbers.
Okay, great. And at the end of the show, I'm going to give you my email address. If you need me for anything, I mean anything, will you please just email me? And then, we could communicate that way if you would like.
Of course.
Okay, thank you.
I think we just became best friends.
Thank you for calling in, okay? Thank you.
Well, okay. Have a good one.
Thank you very much. Doug, do we have another caller?
Yes, Mike.
Hi. Hey, Mike, it's Bobby. Takeover Talk. How are you, Mike?
Bobby, how you doing? Good to hear you. Thanks for taking my call, and I love the show. One question. It's been a bull market for a number of years now, and I've done very well. Do you think I should be taking some money out and maybe putting it somewhere else? How long do you think this is going to last?
Okay. Boy, Mike, that's the question that seems to be the question that everyone is asking. This has been the most hated bull market, I think, on record, if you know what I'm saying. So, who am I to opine on that? But I think at the end of the day, you have to decide where you are in your life, meaning how old you are, how much money you want to continue to put at risk. I always go under this. I come from the school, Mike, there's nothing wrong with taking some money off the table. The Dow, from its low, I think, of 66 or 6,800 back in March of 2009, is trading at 28,000 now. Again, it's just a number, but, I think you have to say to yourself, if by some chance, if another correction occurred, and it was a big correction of anywhere from 30 to 50%, how would you feel if Mike didn't take any money off the table? I'm not saying sell everything.
Not too good.
Okay?
Right. Not too good.
Right. So I think, Mike, that you've answered your own question is, you know what? Look, there'll be another bust tomorrow, if you know what I'm saying, if I could use that cliche. And obviously, you've done quite well, and you probably have a good nose for investing, not only stocks, but in other things. But this bull market, there are many, but many think that this bull market is getting long in the tooth, and that
right. It
is due for a correction. Again, many people have been saying this for the last 2 years, and many people have missed out on the big run. But for you to call and at least being on your mind, I'm not saying it's bothering you, but at least you want to think about, from what I'm getting from you, Mike, is that you probably want to consider going through your portfolio either, on your own volition, meaning just you, or with your advisor or your broker, or whoever, you may ask for advice, and you may just want to say, look, it's been a great run. I hope it continues to last, but if it doesn't, how do I protect myself? Maybe I should consider taking some money off the table, because I think the air is going to start coming out of this big balloon. I just don't know when, Mike. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I totally understand. I agree. I mean, it's been on my mind for a while, so I needed someone else to agree with me. I'm eventually going to decide to take some money, I'm sure. And thanks. This is the advice I needed. Thanks so much,
okay.
Bobby.
And
love your show, bud. Love your show.
Mike, you're the best, and I appreciate you calling in, okay? Thank you very much,
all
Mike.
Right.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Be well. All right, great. Boy, four or five call-ins immediately, like a machine gun. That's great. It's great. That was a great question, Mike had. That's a question that many people ask me. Maybe the Dow is going to continue to, and the S&P is going to continue to go higher. But that does not mean you can't always take a few dollars off the table. You never go wrong with taking a profit. Okay, Doug, I'm sorry. We have another call now?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Darren. It's Bobby Cohen, Takeover Talk. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. My name's Darren. Yourself?
How you doing, Darren? How could I help you? What's your question? Thanks for calling, by the way.
Oh, thank you for having me. So, I'm a college student at Fairleigh Dickinson, and I was just wondering, I'm in the cannabis stocks, you know, I'm trying to build some money so I have it ready for when I graduate, and I'm wondering if you think there's money to be had in cannabis and if I should just keep looking for other cannabis companies to invest in, or if you think it's worth diversifying.
Okay, Darren, that's a question, you know, many people, young and older people, ask me. All I could say is this, because I do believe, and you're probably much more well-versed than I am, Darren, in the cannabis space, but I believe over the next few weeks that Canada is officially, it's going to be officially legal. Cannabis is going to be officially legal in Canada. And true as the stock market is, over the last few months, some of the companies that have had crazy, crazy runs, I mean, up like 200, 300, 400, 500%. Again, to me, that just gets me a little nervous that just possibly, Darren, that these stocks are currently a little bit over their skis, if you know what I'm saying, if I could use that metaphor. They're totally over their skis.
Yeah, of course.
You agree with me on that. But there is one company that I did talk about a few weeks ago. The symbol, I think, is GWPH, which it's GW Pharmaceuticals. And I believe they got an FDA approval in reference to their oil being used for childhood epilepsy. And I think they got approval over the last 90 to 120 days. It's a larger company, Darren. It trades, I believe, at $142. I think it's up $4 or $5 today. But if you wanted to put your toe in the water, why don't you take a hard look at that one, okay? Will you do me that favor?
Yeah, of course. I'll go take a look at GWPH. You said it's GW Pharmaceuticals.
It's GW Pharma. It's a more mature company in the space that you asked me about. I'm not saying that there won't be other, other plays. But right now, like I said, I think that a lot of these companies are getting ahead of themselves in reference to price relative to fundamentals. So I would be doing you an injustice if I steered you towards these speculative situations as of this moment, this second. Okay, Darren?
Okay, I was just, always told when I was starting my portfolio to invest in what I know. And so, I don't know, cannabis just made the most sense to me. Do you think I'm going to see, an increase in shareholder value for the next, maybe semester, until December? Maybe April-ish?
Again, Darren, I have to tell you, these stocks recently have been going to Pluto, been going crazy. I particularly, if you're asking me, this is just Bobby talking, I would wait for some sort of meaningful pullback in these speculative stocks. I can't tell somebody to go hogging, into these situations that are, they've had crazy, crazy runs. I'm not saying they can't continue to go up, but I would feel more comfortable if it was my money just waiting for a significant pullback before I put my toe in the water again, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Bobby. I hope one day I'm, as good as you, learn to hit the bid the way you do.
From your mouth to God's ears. Thank you very much, Darren, and I appreciate you calling. And good luck, by the way, in school at Fairleigh Dickinson, okay?
Thank you so much, Bobby. Love you and love your work.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That was Darren, Fairleigh Dickinson. We have another caller, Doug?
Franco.
Thanks for calling, Franco. It would not be a day. It would not be a Takeover Talk Monday without my friend Franco calling. Thank you, Franco.
Thank you, Bobby. It's always a pleasure to listen to you and for you to share how knowledgeable you are and transmit that to us. I wanted to go out a little bit out of your subject and ask you something about gold. What do you think is going to happen to gold in the next year or two?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because we had another caller, Pete, and he asked the same question. Well, he didn't ask the question. He brought it front and center to the listeners, and he liked gold. Pete was on. He called. He likes the precious metal. And I tended to agree with Pete. I think that at this moment, this second, Franco, there aren't too many people calling to purchase, that are bullish, on gold or silver or any of the other precious metals. And usually, if I put my contrarian hat on, to me, that would mean that there could be something percolating just based on that alone. I call that instinct, that there is just, there aren't too many people that are positive on or constructive on gold. So I'm aware, Franco, that gold's trading around $1,200 right now. And the dialogue that I had with Pete, who called, is that most money managers, Franco, I don't know if you're aware of this, always tell their clients that they should probably have at least 5% of their total portfolio in precious metals. I don't know if you're aware of that, and I agree with that, Franco. I don't know how much capital you currently have in the equity market. But it's always good to have, at least, from what I read, from the smart fund managers, from the smart advisors, they seem to tell everybody, Franco, it's okay to have 5% of your total portfolio exposed in gold and silver. Now, I can't tell you, Franco, if and when gold is going to go or silver is going to go. But like I told Pete, I'd rather be 4 years early on an investment such as gold and silver than a day late. So I think what you're getting from me is that I'm constructive on gold and precious metals. And I don't know where the bottom is, but I think it's time people could start putting their toe in the water, Franco. What do you think?
Yeah, okay. I don't know if, I was wondering if you think it's ever going to reach the 2,000 like one time it was.
Oh, Franco, I have to tell you, is like I had said earlier before, this stock market is being set up for perfection. If by some chance this stock market or something in the economy or something in the world gets derailed, I think people, by definition, are going to gravitate towards gold and silver and the other precious metals. What that means in price, I couldn't tell you in exact numbers, but if there is an event or something happens systemic to the system, not only here, but in other areas, like I had mentioned with Pete, one day it's Turkey, the next day it's Argentina, I would think you're going to see a nice bid in gold and silver. Okay?
Okay, Bobby. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing everything with us. And I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Franco. You're the best. I really enjoy you calling in, Franco. Thank you.
Thank you.
Boy, that's Franco. I have to tell you, he is such a special person. He calls in almost every Monday, and he has such good questions. And I think questions that all the listeners ask or thinking about asking or thinking about, on their mind before they go to sleep or when they wake up in the morning. Okay, that was Franco. Okay, I don't have much time, but I'm going to, I have one or two more companies I'd like to discuss with you today, Monday, September 17th. I'd like to discuss with you a company called Best Buy, BBY. Stock is currently trading at $77.59. The 52-week high is $84.37. The 52-week low is $51.61. Best Buy provides consumer electronics, home office products, entertainment products, appliances, and related services. I read an Investor Place article. Yes, Investor Place. I always make seem to make reference to the Investor Place website. And this one was dated June 21st, 2018. The reporter states, the reporter starts by saying Best Buy has won by providing effective face-to-face expertise about complicated new high-tech products. It goes on to say that in light of Best Buy's success, it's clear that Amazon does not yet have overwhelming market share in the consumer electronics sector. And consequently, Amazon may very well be willing to buy Best Buy in order to improve its position in the space. Wow. Intimating that Amazon possibly acquiring Best Buy. But the article goes on to say that electronic manufacturers such as Panasonic, Samsung, or even Apple might be willing to acquire Best Buy so they could vigorously promote their products at the latter company's stores. Finally, the reporter writes that private equity firms would probably relish the opportunity of acquiring Best Buy in order to increase their profits through downsizing restructuring initiatives. Wow, this was a good read. So get your pencil out. Potential acquirers of Best Buy was Amazon, Panasonic, Samsung, Apple, and private equity. Okay. The next company I'd like to discuss with you is called Sleep Number. Symbol SN. BR, Sam Nancy Boy Robert. The 52-week high was $40.72. The 52-week low was $26.22. Sleep Number Corp. designs, manufactures, markets, and distributes beds, proprietary beds, and other sleep-related accessory products. Well, as I was continuing to comb through that same Investor Place article, which I mentioned was dated June 21st, 2018, I could not overlook the same reporter talking about Sleep Number as a potential takeover target. The article jumps in and says, by acquiring Sleep Number, again, Amazon, that's right, Amazon could get a meaningful foothold in the high-end mattress space. And many consumers probably still like to touch, feel, and lie on expensive mattresses before buying them. Therefore, Sleep Number's 550-plus stores in the United States would allow Amazon to greatly increase its share of the U.S. mattress market. The article continues to go on and say that many other retailers who are struggling to compete against Amazon could also want to enter the high-end market space, which seems to be holding its own against Amazon. Sleep Number's business appears to be healthy and profitable, attributes which should be attractive to these unnamed retailers and to private equity firms. So the article focuses on Amazon as a potential acquirer of Sleep Number, but other retailers, as mentioned, also might be interested too, as well as private equity firms. Well, I have to tell you, this hour went so quick. We had a tremendous amount of people calling in. I loved it. As I always say, takeovers are alive and well. It's an honor. Again, an honor to serve my listeners. If you want to contact me after the show, please shoot me off an email at rcohen9074@aol.com. That's rcohen9074@aol.com. Thank you again, Doug. Thank you today. And thanks bbsradio.com for another hour of Takeover Talk. Bye-bye.